It's Friday, April 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Coming up, the U.S. announces joint patrols with the Philippines in the South China Sea.
These patrols will continue to help build our interoperability and improve the Philippine Navy.
Renewed fighting threatens the latest round of Syria peace talks. The World Bank head says tax evading offshore accounts hurt the poor. And neo-soul artist Erykah Badu has a lengthy Twitter brawl over skirt length. That's all coming up on International Edition. U.S. Secretary of Defense Ash Carter says the U.S. military has been conducting joint patrols in the South China Sea with the Philippines and is increasing its presence on the archipelago with rotational forces and equipment. Speaking at a news conference in Manila with his Filipino counterpart, Carter said the first South China Sea joint patrol was carried out in March, and another patrol was completed in early April.
These patrols, an alliance decision at our 2 plus 2 ministerial, which Voltaire and I held with our respective Secretaries of Foreign Affairs in Washington in January. These patrols will continue to help build our interoperability and improve the Philippine Navy, even as these patrols contribute to the safety and security of the region's waters.
Carter said that hundreds of U.S. troops and about 10 aircraft will remain in the Philippines immediately after annual joint Balikatan exercises conclude on Friday. The airmen will continue joint training, conduct flight operations in the area, including the South China Sea, and lay what the secretary called the foundation for joint air patrols to complement ongoing maritime patrols. In addition, up to 75 U.S. military personnel will stay at Camp Aguinaldo, just east of Manila, to work on interoperability between the two militaries and enhance joint command and control capabilities. The Secretary of Defense said that the increased presence demonstrates the U.S. commitment to Philippine safety and security.
With these steps, we're making a strong alliance even stronger. Our efforts to do more together demonstrate America's unbreakable commitment to the defense of this nation, the stability and security of the Asia Pacific, and the principles that have helped so many in the region to rise and prosper.
This announcement comes amid concerns by the U.S. and others about China's aggressive actions over disputed territories in the South China Sea. China claims almost the entire waterway and has created some 1,200 hectares of artificial islands there. Brunei, Malaysia, the Philippines, Taiwan, and Vietnam also have claims to parts of the waters. Now for a look at how the web is reacting to Secretary Carter's announcement, we're joined by G. Abby Lee. Hello, G.
Hi, Dave.
What is the web saying about the Defense Secretary's meeting in the Philippines?
Not too much, but you can find the latest information from the Twitter account of the U.S. Department of Defense, and that handle is at DPTOfDefense, and it sent out two tweets about the meeting. One of them reads like this: At Manila press conference, the Secretary of Defense and the Philippines Defense Minister hailed EDCA, that stands for Enhanced Defense Cooperation Agreement, implementation and unveil additional U.S.-Philippine cooperative activity. Some 20 people retweeted that.
Now, what else is trending online today?
We briefly talked about it yesterday, but New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio's racial joke is trending once again both on Twitter and Facebook this hour. That's thanks to civil rights activist and Baptist minister Al Sharpton. He made a joke about the joke and commented, "Just don't talk about race for a while, both y'all." Many people took that as a sign that Sharpton doesn't take offense to Bill de Blasio's use of the term CP time. And can you briefly explain to our listeners what that term means?
Well, as I understand it, it refers to what's called colored people time. And it's basically a reference to not being really, really uptight about being on time. Like, mm-hmm. You know, if you're late, big deal. But it's something that in that particular context is probably a little bit racially insensitive for de Blasio to use it, even though he is married to an African-American woman and has children of mixed race. So who knows?
Yeah, and he did say that the first black New York mayor actually didn't oppose to his use of that term. But The reaction, the public reaction that is pretty much the same as when the issue first surfaced. Many people said it was in poor taste and that the repercussion could have been much bigger if the same remark was made by a Republican.
Now the Democrats have a debate here in just a couple of hours. Is that on a trending topic as well?
Yeah, and naturally the trending hashtag is hashtag DemDebate, and I expect the hashtag usage to peak after 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time when the debate starts.
All right, thanks for the wrap-up, G. That is G. Abby Lee. She tweets for our program's account at VOA underscore IE and from her own account at G. Abby Lee. That's J-E-E-A-B-B-E-Y-L-E-E. And you can follow me on Twitter. I am at David underscore D. Byrd, and that's B-Y-R-D. Coming up, Syria's government delays delivery of humanitarian aid. What's ahead for the world economy? And we'll look at Tuesday's presidential primaries in New York. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondence, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day, wherever the news may be. Our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palkov.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. The UN Special Envoy to Syria, Staffan de Mistura, says the Syrian government's restrictions on aid convoys have frustrated efforts to deliver humanitarian aid to people in the war-ravaged country. Speaking in Geneva Thursday after a meeting of the Working Group on Humanitarian Access, Mr. de Mistura said everyone was frustrated and disappointed with the lack of new convoys.
I cannot deny that everyone in the meeting was disappointed, indeed many of them actually frustrated, by the lack of new convoys reaching in particular some areas which, as you know, have been identified as besieged and identified by also the various international documents.
The UN envoy said that aid has not been able to reach several areas, including Douma, Harasta, and Daraya. There was some good news, though. The World Food Program was able to complete three food drops to the city of Deir ez-Zor, which has been besieged by the Islamic State group.
World Food Program has been able to succeed with three airdrops in succession. And the last one today, 26 pallets, which have all reached Deir ez-Zor, and the distribution is likely to start through SARC very soon.
Negotiations on ending the Syrian civil war resumed in Geneva Wednesday. The government's representatives are expected to join the talks Friday. Meanwhile, fighting escalated around Aleppo Thursday as government forces backed by Russian aircraft pressed their offensive north of the city. World Bank President Jim Yong Kim said Thursday he is extremely concerned about the widespread creation of offshore companies by wealthy people around the world to evade taxes. Kim told a news conference in Washington he was distressed by the scope of the offshore accounts as disclosed in the Panama Papers, a massive leak of documents from a Panamanian law firm that for decades helped create the companies across the globe.
We're extremely concerned about the fact that it's been revealed once again, and it was no mystery. We knew that these things were happening. But I want to stress that when taxes are evaded, that when state assets are taken and put into these havens, all of these things can have a tremendously negative effect on our mission to end poverty and boost shared prosperity.
Kim said he is very worried about the recession in Russia, where the economy has been hobbled by declining oil revenues and Western sanctions aimed at Moscow for its 2014 takeover of Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula.
We're very concerned about Russia. We expect Russia will have negative growth again this year. And of course, when Russia has negative growth, it has an impact on many of the countries in the region. And it is one of the major drags on growth in the developing world.
Kim decried the push in Europe to curb migration to the continent and the proposals by some Republican presidential candidates to erect barriers along the southern border with Mexico. Noting that he was a migrant from South Korea, Kim said that many, many countries are going to need to encourage migration to supply their labor markets, especially in cases where their own workers do not want the jobs that need to be filled.
I think the task of envisioning, especially in high-income countries, societies that are multicultural, multilingual, more diverse, more inclusive, is actually a very good economic strategy. So I think that that smart leaders have to sit back and say, we are going to need migrants. We're going to need to increase the diversity and inclusiveness of our societies over time, not only because it's the right thing to do, but for economic reasons.
Kim estimated it will cost between $150 and $180 billion to rebuild Syria. He said the World Bank needs to play a major role in rebuilding the conflict zones there and in other Middle East countries that have seen years of war. Coming up, we'll look ahead to the presidential primary in New York, and soul singer Erykah Badu has a Twitter fight over skirt length. This is VOA.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Turning now to the U.S. presidential campaign, two frontrunners in the race for the White House, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, will face off in a debate in New York in just a few hours. Clinton and Republican Donald Trump are expected to win big in next Tuesday's New York primary. As VOA's Jim Malone tells us, both Clinton and Trump have deep roots in New York, and victories there would give their campaigns a boost after recent setbacks.
Donald Trump expects a home state victory on Tuesday, but Trump has fired off a new round of salvos at the Republican establishment, unhappy that rival Ted Cruz is scooping up uncommitted delegates in other states.
Millions of votes ahead, which they don't even talk about. They never even mention it. They talk about delegates. And I'm hundreds of delegates ahead, but the system, folks, is rigged. It's a rigged, disgusting, dirty system. It's a dirty system.
Cruz says Trump is whining and is trying to bully the party and intimidate delegates.
Nominating Donald Trump would be a train wreck. That if Donald Trump is the nominee, Hillary Clinton wins, and she wins by double digits.
Cruz is running well behind Trump in New York, as is Ohio Governor John Kasich, who has cast himself as an optimistic alternative.
Some who feed off of the fears and the anger that is felt by some of us and exploit it feed their own insatiable desires for fame or attention. That could drive America down into a ditch and not make us great again.
Frontrunner Hillary Clinton is favored in the Democratic race in New York over rival Bernie Sanders. Clinton holds a double-digit lead in most polls and looks to deal Sanders a big setback in New York.
I have noticed that under the bright spotlight and scrutiny here in New York, Senator Sanders has had trouble answering questions. He's had trouble answering questions about his core issue, namely dealing with the banks.
But Sanders continues to draw big crowds like this one in Manhattan and hopes to close the gap on Tuesday.
We have won 7 out of the last 8 caucuses and primaries. And when I look at an unbelievable crowd like this, I believe we're going to win here in New York next Tuesday.
The Democratic race has intensified in New York, said analyst Tom DeFrank on VOA's Issues in the News.
It's getting nastier and nastier, not just on the Republican side, but on the Democratic side, where you've got the two contenders, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, accusing each other of being unqualified to be president, which is just ludicrous on its face.
Both Democrats have New York roots. Sanders was raised in Brooklyn, while Clinton represented New York in the Senate. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Soul singer Erykah Badu is known as an example of feminism and female strength, but she got into a Twitter war recently when she commented on an article about a school in New Zealand that mandated longer skirt lengths for female students to avoid distracting male teachers and students. I spoke with VOA's Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee about the controversy and its repercussions.
Erykah Badu is a symbol for creativity, a symbol for empowerment, for freedom of expression. This is the woman who, in the video for her song Window Seat, walked through downtown Dallas naked. So for her to come, you know, later on, years later, and say, if I had a school, I would mandate this, was really shocking and very upsetting to a lot of people. And for 48 hours, this Twitter rant between Erykah and people who agreed with her and people who disagreed with her went on and on and on. And I thought it was a very interesting conversation when it was good natured, because it brought out a number of issues that we don't often talk about, or at least don't talk about enough. And the first one, and she brought this up through her series of tweets, is about nature. It is, in her opinion, in a man's nature to be attracted to a woman or a girl who is of childbearing age. And so as a mother, and she has 2 girls and a teenage boy. So as a mother, she believed that it is her responsibility to teach them that they should dress a bit modestly just to prevent anything from happening. And then there's that conversation, the nature versus principle. You know, should young men and older men be more principled and say, well, even if I'm attracted, that doesn't give me a right to do anything. And then, again, how we socialize, girls versus boys. And this is a very important topic, especially when it comes to hip hop and certain forms of music. And although she is a neo soul artist, she is also very much ingrained in hip hop culture. And so, you know, hip hop is this hyper masculine culture that will teach young men that to be a man, you must, how can I put this gently? You must romance as many women.
Be in a relationship with a lot of young women, particularly young women in tight clothes.
Yeah, exactly.
Did I get that okay?
Yes, I think that was a good way to put it.
That's the diplomatic way to put
it. Yeah. And then also the conversation about how attire determines treatment and whether or not your attire should determine your treatment. And this, again, is a very important conversation for many of her fans, because she is popular in the African-American community. And years ago, there was a question about whether or not a hoodie, when Trayvon Martin was killed, whether or not, you know, young black men should be concerned about the kinds of clothes that they wear for fear that they may be mistaken for criminals or thugs or whatever. So this is such an interesting and multi-level conversation in which so many layers are being peeled back. And I would recommend, if anyone has some time on Twitter, it'll take you a while to follow it.
And if you want to join into this discussion, her handle, Erykah's handle on Twitter, is at Fat Belly Bella. That's B-E-L-L-A. And our handle here is at VOA underscore IE. If you want to talk about it with Shauna, she is at VOA underscore music. She's also at VOA Lady DJ. You can log on to our website, also voanews.com. And a couple of eras came to an end on Wednesday night. Kobe Bryant played the final game of his legendary 20-year career with the National Basketball Association's Los Angeles Lakers. The 37-year-old Bryant scored a season-high 60 points to rally the Lakers from a 15-point deficit to a 101-96 victory over the Utah Jazz. Kobe spent his entire career with the Lakers, but that career was nearly derailed in 2003 when a young woman in Colorado accused him of rape. Prosecutors charged him with sexual assault and false imprisonment, but the charges were dropped when his accuser decided not to testify. Meanwhile, up the California coast, the Golden State Warriors made NBA history by trouncing the Memphis Grizzlies 125-104 in Oakland to post a record-breaking 73rd win on the last game of the 2015-2016 regular season. The previous record was held by Michael Jordan and his teammates with the Chicago Bulls. Thanks for joining us for VOA's International Edition. Tracy Carter directed our program. Jim Harmon was our engineer. We welcome your questions or comments about our program. You can find us on Facebook at VOA Now. Follow us on Twitter at VOA underscore IE. And you can email us at voaasia at voanews.com. Enjoy your Friday. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On March 20th, the Republic of Congo held presidential elections considered flawed. Marred by widespread irregularities, a media blackout during the polls, an imbalanced and restrictive media environment, significant disparity in access to state resources, a short time frame for electoral preparations, and restrictions on freedoms of expression, communication, and association in the pre-election period. In this political environment, President Denis Sassou Nguesso won a third five-year term in office in an election that officially gave him 60% of the vote. Nguesso, who is 72 years old, decided to run for a third presidential term in fall of 2015. Under the country's constitution, Mr. Nguesso was not eligible to run for a third term and was also disqualified due to his age. In order to remove these obstacles, his government proposed changes to the country's constitution that would enable him to run for a third term. On October 25th of last year, the Congolese government held a deeply flawed referendum to alter the country's constitution, despite massive protests on October 20th and 21st that turned bloody when security forces opened fire into the crowd of protesters, media outlets reporting dozens killed or injured. The ruling party announced that the referendum passed with nearly 93% of the vote. Tensions rose as the opposition disputed the results of the referendum. But another protest planned by the opposition for October 30th was canceled since the ban on protests had not been lifted and opposition leaders feared more bloodletting among their supporters. A similar fate befell a press conference planned for March 25th, during which the opposition planned to announce the results of its parallel vote count. The event was disrupted and then canceled when police used tear gas to disperse the crowd of opposition supporters and arrested many of them. Weeks after the government announced President Sassou's victory in the presidential election, violence has escalated in the capital. Heavy shooting and clashes between security forces and the opposition have led hundreds of residents of southern Brazzaville to flee their homes on foot toward the calmer north of the city. The United States is profoundly disappointed by the flawed presidential electoral process in the Republic of Congo, said State Department Deputy Spokesperson Mark Toner in a written statement. The United States calls upon the Congolese government to correct these numerous deficiencies before scheduling legislative elections in order to bring credibility to future electoral processes. We continue to urge the Congolese government to respect the people's constitutional rights of freedom of expression, movement, and association. We further encourage all parties to engage in constructive, inclusive dialogue.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.